that lie ahead. Now therefore, the City Council of the City of Pismo Beach does hereby proclaim March 2006 as American Red Cross Month. The City Council urges all Americans to continue to give your time, blood, and money to make a difference in the humanitarian fabric of this community. Because when we help the American Red Cross, we help each other. Dated the 7th day of March, 2006, Mary Ann Reese, Mayor.
Would Jay Jameson meet me at the lectern? I should have thought about presenting this to you at the breakfast this morning. It's my pleasure to present this to you, and I know you're a member of the board, and I was pretty delighted to hear the stories this morning. It was quite uplifting to hear from the people that had been helped and from the people that had been helping. So it's my pleasure to present this to you today.
Thank you very much. If I may, I'm Jay Jamison, and I'm on the board of directors of the San Luis Obispo County Red Cross. And I want to thank, on behalf of a lot of volunteers, a small staff, the council for their proclamation declaring March the Red Cross Month. And thank you for your ongoing support of the Red Cross. And I know that cooperatively and individually you've all supported our endeavors, and I want to thank you for that. As you read the proclamation, there were a number of statistics that I was going to share, and so I won't do that, but I just really do want to emphasize our little county, the movement that and the energy that is generated when something takes place like the hurricanes down in the Gulf is just incredible. Our county stepped up and trained 400 people to be deployed to go down and help, and we sent 250 of them. And it was incredible. And like the mayor was saying, the stories that were shared this morning of folks that participated are very moving. And our little county made a name for itself down there by the kind of quality of the personnel that went down there and represented us. So it really is an exciting thing. And if you know of anybody that went, please thank them, because they did make an impact and help people that were in need. So that's a small part of the Red Cross, obviously. We step up in times like that, but the Red Cross really is involved 24/7 locally in training and in stepping up when people have flooding or their houses burned down, and training and preparation and so forth. And so there's always activity going on, and we're always looking for volunteers. So we encourage the public to get involved. And I also wanted to acknowledge Joe Cortez, who's also on our board of directors, and Chief Cortez has been involved for almost a year and has done a great job. So anyway, thank you very much. A lot of people are very proud of this. So thank you.
Thank you. The next item on our agenda is public comment. This is the time for the public to comment on items that are not on the agenda. I do have a few cards, and I will begin with these. If you've not filled out a card and you would like to comment, please do so. These are items that are not on the agenda. The first card I have is Donna Sullivan.
My name is Donna Sullivan, and I'm the Action Director of the League of Women Voters of San Luis Obispo County. The SLO County League has hundreds of women and men members throughout the county, including Pismo Beach. Our members are committed to promote the active participation of citizens at all levels of government. We also believe that governmental bodies must protect a citizen's right to know by giving adequate notice of proposed actions, holding open meetings, and making public records accessible. Across our great nation, we will celebrate for the second year in a row Sunshine Week. It's next week, March 12th to 18th, so we hope the weather will cooperate too. Sunshine Week is sponsored by journalism groups, media companies, open government and First Amendment advocates, librarians, and educators across the country. The purpose of Sunshine Week is to stimulate public discussion about why open government is important to everyone. The League of Women Voters believes that democratic government depends on the informed and active participation of its citizens at all levels of government. The League further believes that governmental bodies must protect the citizens' right to know by giving adequate notice of proposed actions, holding open meetings, and making public records accessible. At a time when the public is deeply concerned about governmental openness, we must do everything we can to protect our democratic right to hold our government accountable for its actions. When our right to know is in danger, then our democracy is at risk. Citizens and elected officials must do all we can to keep the workings of our government and public information out in the open and in the sunshine. We urge the citizens and this elected body of Pismo Beach to work together to keep the government open and accessible, and to join the League to spread word about the importance that our open system of government plays in sustaining our democracy. We welcome both citizens and elected officials of Pismo Beach to contact the League to learn more about the importance of open government in a strong and sustainable democracy. And our phone number is 543-2220. We also have a website, which is slo.ca.lwvnet.org. Thank you.
Thank you. The next card I have is Art Anthony.
Madam Mayor, Council Members, Art Anthony, I live on Coral Court. First, I'd like to thank the Five Cities Times Press Recorder newspaper for their good work in enabling free speech in our South County area. I also want to talk about mutual respect and playing by the rules. City meetings are governed by rules, specifically by the Municipal Code, which is a law, and generally by Robert's Rules of Order, which is a guide. The City Code has at least four sections which are pertinent to Mr. Rabinault's conduct at your February 21st meeting. They are powers and duties of the presiding officer, rules of debate, rules of decorum, and enforcement of decorum. These begin at section 2.04170 and go through section 2.04.250. Here's one that Mr. Rabinault ignored repeatedly. Quote, if a council member while speaking is called to order, he shall cease speaking until the question of order is determined, and if determined to be in order, he may proceed, end quote. I heard the mayor ask Mr. Rabinault to stop speaking several times, and his responses were, quote, I'm not finished yet, Marianne, end quote. Next, the mayor says, stop, please. Rabinault replies, quote, there is no time limit on council discussions, and goes on speaking. At one point, when the mayor tries to get him to stop, she says, I am the mayor. Mr. Rabinault's response is, for a while. Another time, the mayor asks him for decorum. His response was, quote, okay, I'll talk a little lower, end quote. The Municipal Code says, quote, while the council is in session, the members must preserve order and decorum, and a member shall neither by conversation or otherwise delay or interrupt the proceedings of the peace of the council, nor disturb any member by speaking or refuse to obey the orders of the presiding officer, end quote. Let me repeat that. Or refuse to obey the orders of the presiding officer, who is the mayor. The Municipal Code charges the Chief of Police as Sergeant of Arms of the City Council to, quote, carry out all orders given by the presiding officer for the purpose of maintaining order and decorum at council meetings, end quote. Rude, unprofessional, and boorish behavior is unacceptable in these meetings, especially coming from an elected person who has taken an oath to uphold the law. If you do not respect one another in public meetings, how can you expect us to respect you and have confidence in your ability to create and enforce city laws?
The next card I have is Charlie Catherman.
Good Madam Mayor, council members, my name is Charlie Catherman. I live at 206 Indio Drive, Shell Beach. I'm not going to give a lecture today. I'm here to talk about the proposed or planned stairway for Shell Beach, the north end of Shell Beach, between North and South Beachcomber. This is a stairwell that's been in the planning stage for probably 10 years, discussed with Mr. Delzide and staff for probably five or six. Some of you, the council members here, have discussed this stairwell with residents, with me, Mr. Bell. And I'm here because the stairwell issue is high-centered and not moving anywhere. Short history, design was done for the stairwell by a local architect, sent out for review and bid. One bid came back. The amount of money that was bid was later changed by $100,000. The numbers aren't important other than to say it exceeded the amount of money that has been earmarked by the city and your council for construction of this stairwell. That bid was also rescinded. So that's part of the reason why it's on high center. I would like your help in moving this along. The funds have been in place for at least 6 or 7 years due to developer participation. The Coastal Commission has, in concept, approved the stairwell. I have discussed with Mr. Rabinault and Mr. Delzite and Mr. Ray taking this out to a local contractor for design and build. Hopefully that can be accomplished rather than going back through the bid scenario, which since steel prices have doubled, I don't think we're going to get anywhere near the number that we have earmarked for the stairwell, which I believe is $265,000. That kind of money seems to me as though we should be able to build a stairway. My number is on the card that I submitted to the mayor, 773-3393. I'm happy to answer any questions, get into a little more detail rather than here at your meeting. And it's good for the community. We don't really have beach access on that end of Shell Beach. We'd like to see something happen. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I don't know if the staff has any comment on that or not. Do you have any comment? Does the staff want to make any comment on that?
Madam Mayor and Council, yeah. We could comment on it tonight. I mean, it might also be better. We could give a short comment tonight and maybe agendize it and then come back with a full report on all the details. Actually, Mr. Ray is standing in tonight for Mr. Delzide, who's on vacation this week.
Okay.
And Greg actually has, I think, a lot of hard data on it. Greg?
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Mr. Catherman, I believe, stated the condition pretty well. The impact fee fund has about $267,000 collected in it. The one bid we did receive was over $300,000. It's hard to tell if the anticipated bid on that project was due to the materials. We were going with a fiberglass material at the time that we thought would be actually less expensive than the stainless steel. The project's basically on hold, waiting for more developer impact fees to be placed into that fund. And as we get closer to what we think it might cost, we'll kind of re-energize that project and try to get it back on track. But that's pretty accurate about the status of it.
Okay.
Madam Mayor and Council, if I could,
yes.
Too. The staff did intend to bring it back at the mid-cycle budget review because it does lack enough money to go ahead and get it built. And at that time, then the council will have to decide whether you want to allocate some additional revenues to finish up, to create the staircase which, as Greg just said, does already have a number of developer impact fees laid against it, just not enough.
I thought I was remembering that we were going to do some redesign work or something to try to lower the cost on it, but we can agendize it one day and talk about that, I guess.
I'll be happy to agendize it within the next month or so. We can come back with a full report on it.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. There seems to be questions on it on an ongoing basis, so I'd appreciate it. Mary Lee Hyman. I'm sorry. Did you have something you wanted to say?
I just want to make sure we're going to agendize it.
Okay. All right.
Mary Lee Hyman, Shoreline Drive, Madam Mayor and members of council. You know how you all hate it when someone who's guilty as the Dickens gets away with it because of a technicality in the law. Well, the League of Cities says the minimum standard is the law. The higher standard is to follow the code of ethics. Our code of ethics was brought forward by Rudy Natoli and seconded by Bill Rabinault and adopted by this council last year. Now, what exactly did you adopt? I believe it's important enough to read part of that code tonight. You commit to excellence that requires you to comply with both the letter and the spirit of the laws, and that processes can be conducted, quote, in an atmosphere of respect and civility, close quote. Under number 3 in the code covering conduct of members, it says, the conduct of members must be above reproach and shall refrain from abusive conduct, personal charges, or verbal attacks upon the character or motives of the other members and the character or motives of the public. Under number 6, advocacy, when presenting their individual opinions and positions, members shall explicitly state they do not represent the city of Pismo Beach, nor will they allow inference that they do so. Under 15, independence of boards and commissions. Because of the value of the independent advice of boards and commissions to the public decision-making process, members of council shall refrain from using their position to unduly influence the deliberations or outcomes of board and commission proceedings. Members shall in no way create the perception of inappropriate direction to staff. And under enforcement, the mayor shall have the additional responsibility to intervene when actions appear to be in violation of the code of ethics, and the city council may impose sanctions. We need you, our leaders, to focus your energies on the important matters placed before you each council meeting. We need you to be excellent, not morning coffee entertainment. Thank you for your indulgence.
Thank you. Elaine Anthony?
Yeah, I think so. This is my turn.
My name is Elaine Anthony. I live on Coral Court. Mayor Reese, members of the council. In a recent newspaper guest commentary and in letters to the editor, Mayor Pro Tem Gonzalez G. accused citizens of not having the facts about her right to speak before the Planning Commission regarding a downtown project being considered by that commission. She claims she had the right to ask them not to approve the project. True, the project is boxy looking and quite controversial. But when a council member asks the commission not to approve of a project while they're still in the process of studying it, this is nothing but coercion. She asked the wrong questions of the FPPC and therefore got the wrong answers. All of us have the right to speak. But what Mrs. Gonzalez G. and Mr. Rabinault did was to lobby the Planning Commission to deny the project prior to the time the lower body had even considered it. This is called prejudging and attempting to influence that body, which is a definite no-no. I'd like to read a part of a letter written by Dr. Brahma Sharma, who is an expert on parliamentary procedures and the rules of government bodies. Dr. Sharma is a resident of Pismo Beach. Quote, by a council member appearing before the Planning Commission and exercising the so-called right to speak as a citizen in favor or against a project is tantamount to coercion of the commissioners before an independent study of the issue is made by that commission. Quote, just imagine an appellate court judge making public pronouncements about a case that is likely to come before that appellate court before the lower court has completed its deliberations. Dr. Sharman goes on to say, let us not bring in irrelevant issues of the right to speak and conflict of interest. Those are clearly an attempt to sidetrack criticism. Ends do not justify the means. Due process must be followed, period. End of quote. My final thought on this whole process takes me back to my college days and a famous line by William Shakespeare. Quote, methinks the lady doth protest too much. End quote. Thank you.
Thank you. Tim Bittner.
Tim Bittner, 800 Norma Drive, Madam Mayor and Council members. I've got three items tonight, but we'll start at the top. The stop sign at 4th Street and James Way. In the original traffic study, there was a yield sign placed, and this is coming up 4th Street to stop at James Way. It's new in about the last 3 or 4 months. There was a yield sign placed at 4th Street and James Way intersection. The intention of this was to prevent traffic from stacking up on 4th Street into the intersection on the bridge. It was also allow the northbound off-ramp to completely unload. Since the construction of the hotel on the corner, a new traffic study, provided by the hotel, I'm sure, seems to be in play. We now have a stop sign in place where the yield sign was. This is a San Francisco-type stop sign, uphill at the steepest part of the road. It often leaves folks ducking for cover in the middle of the intersection or frustrated backing up on the on-ramp. Those with standard transmissions also tend to coast right on through because they don't want to slip back into somebody behind them. I recommend a third study or just some common sense be given to determine the proper signage there. Second issue is, this is a quote from Bill Rabinow. It is documented fact that we don't pay our own way, and I'm trying to quote this exactly, any longer. This is referring to the citizens of the Pismo Beach, himself included, I'm sure. 2/3 of our general fund is paid by the businesses. This is something that Bill said with which I can actually agree with him. This is pretty much a fact at city level. This is true simply because the state and federal government have taken all the cream off the top. At state and federal level, the opposite is true. 2/3 of the tax base comes from Joe Average, people like us right here in this room. We are far more stable tax base than companies and corporations who get a lot of excessive breaks. I should like to point out that the vast majority of us are also voters who decide who runs our city. Bill, armed with obviously newfound information that we citizens don't pay our own level, please explain, this is about the 20th time I've asked, how you and your colleagues can justify a yes vote on Los Robles del Mar. This annexation is virtually all individual housing, which will be filled with folks just like us who don't pay their fair share, and will be how will this be a positive or neutral situation for the city? This project will end up a double drain on the city, which is with its unproven water supply, and will probably be an inadequate water supply, along with being unproven. We citizens may not pay our way, but it does appear that somebody must be paying somebody to get their way. Last one is, again, Dr. Sharma. I would like to thank him very much for his letter. I think it explained things very clearly. I'm glad to see our council members concerned for the project in the downtown area. There was great outrage for this ill-fitting hotel-type project in the middle of a residential neighborhood in the other end of town seemed to be void. No one cared when we got a big project down there. I guess your outrage is reserved for your end of the town. Thank you.
Your time is up. Thank you. I have no more cards. Is there anyone else that would like to speak to an item that's not on the agenda? Seeing none, then I will come back to the council. Now is the time for city council comments, and the Mayor Pro Tem is asked to go first.
Well, thank you. I wanted to explain to everyone why I missed the last city council meeting. My husband, Val, had surgery, and that was the reason I was unable to attend. And I also wanted to thank everyone for their cards, calls, flowers, prayers, and emails. And thank you all very much. And he is very much on the mend, so thank you, those who do care. And I wanted to ask our city manager, Mr. Rice, about an article in the newspaper that it stated that the city of Pismo Beach had a two-year term besides the mayor's seat being a two-year term. And I received a lot of calls, and I wondered if you could clarify it, because I told them there was not an adopted resolution as far as I knew. So if you'll please clarify that for us.
Yes, ma'am. I'll be happy to. Madam Mayor and Council, we do not currently have a set two-year term, except for, of course, as you just said, for the mayor's term. The mayor, now that we went to a directly elected mayor, is a two-year term. We have been asked by council, I believe, quite a while back, actually, to bring forward to you for your consideration whether you want to adopt a two-year term to try and get us off this thing where right now we have four members of council whose terms are all expiring at once, to include the mayor's. So within the next month, we will bring back to council for your consideration whether or not you want to do that, but it will require a resolution on the part of the council whether or not you all want to adjust that or not. So does that answer your question?
Thank you very much. Okay. I'm sure it clarifies it for all those that had questions about it. Also, I wanted to mention that the newly opened Wooden Cypress Bridge, that on the weekend I saw quite a few cars using it, so I think it will alleviate some of the traffic on the weekends. And that's all I have, Madam Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Natoli.
I'd like staff to take a look at...
I'd like to have staff take a look at Shamrock with the possibility, perhaps, of putting some speed bumps on the area of Shamrock that goes downhill. Cars are speeding constantly down there. In fact, one of our commanders that lives on that street had to chase after a few people that were just speeding down that road, and he lives on the street too. And just recently, I almost lost a grandson going across the street from one of those speeders. And I don't want to see that happen. I don't want to see the city take action after somebody gets killed. So I'd like staff to take a look at that, perhaps get the safety committee to take a look at it, and figure out what we can do with speed bumps or something to slow down the traffic. And most of those people that are doing that are people that live on that street, on the upper end of the street. They just fly down that street, and it's very dangerous. So I'd really like to see something done in that respect. That's all I have.
Thank you. Councilman Rabinow.
Yes, Madam Mayor, not much. I'm very, very proud of our fire department and everybody that lent a hand in the lost soul that we had at the end of Vista Del Mar. I happen to live on that street and spent many an hour out there watching the goings-on. And, boy, I'll tell you, when you see those helicopters, I mean, they're right down at the water's level. I mean, it's really an intense effort. And I must say that I feel very, very comfortable living in this community and having that kind of support. And it wasn't just our fire people. It was I saw a highway patrol helicopter go by, and I've seen other jurisdictions' vehicles going by there, and it was just great. And I'm certainly glad that the body was recovered. Certainly bring him back home, and after some time closure on that. So we have a very, very fine department. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you. Councilwoman Higginbotham.
Thank you, Mayor Reese. Last week, the Lucia Mar School Board, with much relief to many of us, they're faced with tremendous budget cuts, and one of the cuts that they were considering was to cut assistant principals and counselors from the middle schools, which was terribly illogical to me, to save $180,000. Fortunately, they voted not to do that. When I talked to Chief Cortez, I used the words, Pismo Beach dodged a bullet with that decision. And literally, we did. And I'll explain why. A few years ago, the City Council made a policy decision to put more police presence and focus downtown. They felt that that was really important. So therefore, the police department eliminated the juvenile services officer, and a lot of time was spent up at Judkins Middle School. Now, I'm in my fourth consecutive year up there, so I've seen the phases that the kids go through. So the principal, the assistant principal, the counseling staff are really the core people that help manage about 385 teenagers. And that's a huge task. And they do get a lot of support from the police. However, faced with losing an assistant principal and the counselor, I can't even imagine the chaos that would have ensued during breaks and lunch times and not having those support services. And I think that the chief would concur in my concern. So we were so pleased at that decision because it was the right one for the students and the teachers. So along those lines, on Sunday, I was so happy to participate in a groundbreaking at the New Life Community Church because they are in the beginning stages of building a new youth community center. And they already have over 185 teenagers that participate in their weekday programs. They have two evenings, Tuesdays and Wednesdays, where they provide programming for teens. And you can't believe it. I've taken my kids there. You cannot believe the numbers of kids that are there participating. So when we as a council make policies or the school board makes policies, you know, it really is all connected. And I am so glad that other people are stepping up to the plate and realizing how important some of these decisions are and how it does affect the residents of the city. So I was really happy about that. And congratulations to New Life because it's going to be a tremendous facility. Along those lines, also next Friday on the 17th of March, there's going to be a Civil War encampment going on at the middle school. And I know that the teachers have worked really closely with the city, the police department, special events committee, and it's going to be an overnight event. And I guess they have some phenomenal things that I can't publicly announce because it's a secret to the kids. Mm-hmm. But they have some great events planned, and this is the first time they've ever put this event on, so it's going to be a great experience for the kids. We're really excited. And I believe that's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. Does anyone else have anything before I
just wanted to, I didn't know if you were going to mention about the volunteers.
Volunteer banquet?
Banquet on Friday, if you might mention that.
Okay.
Because we hear so much, I don't have the all the numbers, but we hear so much after the fact, and it's nice so that people that do want to attend know in advance.
Okay. It's March 10th. At 6:30, 6 o'clock.
6 o'clock.
At the Bellow Street Vets Hall. We're going to be honoring all of our volunteers. And I think so far we have about 150 that will be attending. And we'd welcome all of you to come. It's a treat to honor them because if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be able to do as much as we do. believe me, between recreation and police and the different areas, and maybe the city manager could embellish that just a little bit.
Well, it is the council wanted us to institute this annual volunteer banquet. I think it's a great idea. We did one last year, which was a great success. So it is, again, this Friday, 6 p.m., Bellow Street, Vets Hall. If you haven't already RSVP'd for some reason and you're a volunteer and you'd like to come, you and your spouse, please call Lori Grigsby, our city clerk, whose number is 773-7003. Thank you.
Okay, I just have a couple of things. I participated in Read Across America at Shell Beach School, and actually I saw Councilmember Rabinall's mother-in-law there that day, and I wore a cat in a hat hat, and I really, really enjoyed it. The kids were great. They were second graders. And I also attended the groundbreaking for the Youth Center at New Life, and it's going to be quite a facility. And we're very fortunate that they were able to do this kind of a thing in our city. And I wanted to compliment the firefighters that did go out twice in one day on rescues. And I think I'm hoping I have the names right. I think it was Raul Malgoza. And I think Tyler James went out twice, and he looked pretty exhausted that night when I saw him. And Brad Page, they went out twice, I think, or at least Tyler did. And I wanted to just give them my kudos for that. Also, the City Selection Committee, which is made up of mayors, and I'd mentioned this before, nominate someone to the governor's office to serve on the Coastal Commission. And this year, what they wanted to do was to try to nominate one person if they could. And they did get a decision from the county council indicating that it would be okay to do that. There was two people that were actually asked to be nominated, and later on someone contacted me, because I am the chair of that selection committee, and said that they thought that the interpretation of the code was not done properly and asked for us to look at that again. And sure enough, the county council indicated that we are supposed to nominate one person from a city, or at least one person from the city and one person from the Board of Supervisors. So there is still an opportunity for individuals from city councils to apply for the Coastal Commission. We will be having a meeting on, I have to think of the date, the 14th. It's Tuesday the 14th. Is that the right date? Okay, Tuesday the 14th. It's at the Government Center in San Luis. And again, you are to submit your resume and arrive there for an interview. And so if any of you are interested in applying for the Coastal Commission, please, you know, indicate that to me and give me a resume and then attend that meeting for an interview. Okay? The other thing I wanted to talk about is maybe that we should think about having a team building session. And I was just going to read you something that I ran across again. It's something that came out of a Western city, and it says, give the council a tune-up. Set aside time for the council to stop riding the bicycle, check it out for loose parts. Any group process needs to be examined occasionally to see where improvements can be made in the conduct of business. An annual team-building process is an opportunity for the council to review its meeting operations, the city's strategic plan, communication on projects or between the council and staff, or any number of issues. It is usually during these sessions that we learn what drives our colleagues, what their personal goals are, and how council members can work together to achieve mutual goals. The most effective councils are usually those that have a clear vision, agreed-upon goals, a clear work program, and a strong relationship with the manager and staff based on trust, communication, and accountability. And I was just going to ask if this council maybe would consider setting a team building like we did last year, either that type of a team building or the one participating in the one that the league does every year? Would the council be interested in doing that? Would you like to do that again?
I think that would be good.
You'd be interested in doing that?
Yeah, here. I don't think that we should spend money to go to Lake Arrowhead or one of those places like everybody else does. I think it's a waste of money.
Okay.
But I would like to see a local one done that we did last year.
Well, the one that, Madam Mayor, that you're speaking of with the league, I looked at those numbers, and frankly, they're outrageous. In excess of $10,000 for this council to go and try to communicate with each other. The one we had here, what was it? It's way too expensive. I wouldn't even consider spending that kind of our constituents' money. I mean, it's ridiculous. But the one we had here, do you know, that was good, but do you know what the cost was to the city?
Right off the top of my head, I don't. I mean, I could get it very readily because I've got the records. Guessing if I tried to tell
you. Well, there was no overnight stays. We all met. I think the only downfall was there was a lot of, once it's noticed that any citizen can attend, and I think that puts a little damper on, the communication or talking out what we need to talk out. But that's fine. If we could find out those numbers, because there's no overnight stay, no meals, it's just paying for whoever's traveling from. Where was the last? Where did he travel from?
He was from San Jose, so we paid for one or maybe two nights lodging for him. But we also got a special deal through the hotel; they were give us a good rate.
So we paid for what?
So it was very reasonable.
2 days for him, and then
2 days
his
for him, and then.
Yeah.
We had to pay for the meeting room, but I think even that was very nominal.
Well, see, now that I would consider, but to travel and spend in excess of $10,000, I don't think it's wise.
Well, if I have consensus, I would really like to set that up. If we could do that maybe by about June this year. I think we have another several months with each other, and who knows, maybe another couple of years with each other. So I would really like to do that, and I appreciate it. If I could get
well, Madam Mayor, if I may, I have very strong feelings about the one up at Arrowhead. That was a great learning experience for me. I probably learned more about myself more than I did the rest of you. But the cost is obscene, and I wouldn't consider that again.
It was a good session, though. I agree
it was. Oh, it was. Yeah. It was. And, I would certainly buy into having one here done locally. Regardless of what some think, I would really like to see a working, cohesive council. I truly would. But if that is in effect me having to check my emotions and my caring as much as I do at the door, and I, the criticism, some of this criticism I receive, I truly do wear it as a badge of honor, because things do happen, and it sometimes takes that kind of a personality to make it happen. But if we could come together and have some resolve, it would be less tense, and it would we could move forward and create some goals. So I would support that.
Thank you, Mr. City Manager. I think we have a consensus, and the sooner that we could set something up like that, I would really appreciate it.
And I'd like to hear the numbers as well. The cost would be.
I can actually get you the numbers by tomorrow morning, and I'll email all of you the numbers. So. And then we can decide which way we want to go.
Okay, that'd be great. Thank you so much. Thank you, Council. I really appreciate that. Okay, the next item on our agenda is consent agenda. Is there anything on the consent agenda that anyone wants to pull?
I'd like to pull item 4H and 4I for discussion.
4H and 4I. Okay, I will consider a motion to approve the balance of the items.
So moved.
Is there a second?
I second it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve the balance of the items, with the exception of H and I.
Councilmember Natoli.
Aye.
Mayor Pro Tem Gonzalez G.
Yes.
Councilmember Higginbotham.
Yes.
Councilmember Rabinault.
Yes.
Mayor Reese.
Yes.
Passes 5-0.
Okay, 4H and 4I will go to the end of the agenda. We have no public hearing items, so the next item on our agenda is 6A.
Madam Mayor and Council, item 6A is the Fire Department's quarterly report. Back on the 17th of January of this year, the City Council went ahead and approved a two-year contract with the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection. And that 2 years runs from July 1, 2005 through 30 June 2007. At that time, also, the council had asked for a quarterly report to you all on a variety of items. And those items, Chief Harkness tonight is prepared to brief you on. And then, obviously, you can ask him questions. And if you have additional guidance on how you want that briefing changed or if you want additional things included in the future, this would be a good time to give that to him. And with that, Chief Harkness.
Thank you, Mr. City Manager. Michael Harkness, Battalion Chief with CDF in Pismo Beach. As a Battalion Chief, I'm responsible for the day-to-day operational oversight of the Fire Department in Pismo Beach. My supervisor is Greg Pisano, who's a Division Chief, and he supervises the Coastal Division, which includes three Battalion Chiefs. He's in the building tonight, as well as Fire Chief Matt Jenkins, who supervises Greg. As a battalion chief, I work a 24-hour shift, and I'm at the start end of the week, so I work Sunday through Wednesday. My partner, Dan Anderson, works the back end of the shift Wednesday through Saturday. So a battalion chief or chief officer is available to the city 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. And what I'd like to talk to you about tonight is five subjects that council asked for: personnel, which includes full-time, part-time, and lifeguards, training, apparatus, dispatch, and then any questions you may have in future topics you'd like to bring to the next quarterly report. As a battalion chief, I supervise three stations, and those three stations compose a battalion. The battalion is the main station on Bella Street, which is Pismo, or Pismo Station. The station in Shell Beach, which was brought on board with the new contract. And a third station in Avila Valley. So even though your initial contract was to go from one station to two, you actually went to three. The Avila Beach station is also staffed 24/7 with a captain engineer. It's 1.7 miles out of the city limits, responds on a regular basis into the city, and runs into the city between 150 and 200 times a year. So you're actually being served immediately by three stations, which constitute the battalion. The nice thing about those three stations is that it gives us some nice bench strength. The other day, thank you for your nice comments on the SURF rescue. The other day we had both of our engine companies from Pismo and Shell Beach and callback personnel committed to that incident for about 4 hours. While the city resources were fully committed, our county station from Avila Valley, again 1.7 miles away, moved up and covered the city from our Shell Beach station, which is a central location.
You know, I want to make sure that I gave all the people credit that I should have, and I'm feeling a little bit bad about that. So if there were other people I should have mentioned, please say so.
We'll take your nice comments. Thank you very much. Your comments were accurate of the three members that went in the water.
Okay.
So when we had the SURF rescue, the two city stations were committed, and our county engine moved up and covered, as well as a engine from the Five Cities Auto Aid Agreement. So that third station gives us a lot of bench strength. Conversely, we had a CPR in progress today at the Avila Hot Springs, right at the intersection there at in 101 and Avila Beach Road, and our Shell Beach engine assisted the county engine, so both stations were there immediately to assist in CPR. So it's a very cooperative agreement, and engine companies and personnel move throughout the battalion on a regular basis. In terms of boundary drops, as just a quick overview here, one of the CDF-initiated projects early on in our contract was to put together a very aggressive Five Cities Ottawa Aid Agreement. And so we've worked closely with the dispatch centers in the five cities and our CDF County Fire Dispatch in San Luis. And what we essentially have is a boundary drop now. We're the closest fire engine response to the emergency. Regardless of emergency type, each emergency has a standard response, whether it's one engines, two engines in a rescue, add a chief officer, add a truck. It's the same throughout the entire five cities. Any emergency gets the same response, regardless of the color of the engine or the patch on the arm. In addition to initial dispatch, we also have a backup and cover agreement. The five cities and county engines that surround us do a quick backup. So if we have two engines committed to an incident, as we did the other day on the surf rescue, we have backup engines that are going to cover any future emergencies. And the last information on my overview is regional dispatching. CDF currently dispatches for four cities in the county, three contracts, and 17 stations. And the city is surrounded by county engines. We have a county engine at the airport, one in San Luis, one in Avila, one in Napomo Mesa, and one in Napomo. So the regional dispatching not only works well for the five cities area, but also the areas surrounding the city to get additional engine companies in. So that's just a quick overview of where we're at right now in terms of the three stations within the battalion and the boundary drops that have been accomplished for our regional fire protection system. Personnel. I'd like to quickly talk about some of the personnel that are available to you and who pays for it. Mm-hmm. At our Pismo station, which is the slide up there right now, which is also the first picture in your packet, we have three people on duty 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that's a captain and engineer under contract from CDF and a reserve firefighter who's directly paid for by the city. So this is 100% city funded. Regardless of where the paycheck comes from, the city of Pismo Beach funds all three of these people, a captain, an engineer, and a firefighter, and they're standing in front of their first out engine. So the city pays 100% of the cost of the Bellow Street staffing for three personnel 24/7. At our Shell Beach station, which was opened up about 4 years ago at council direction, the city pays about 40% of the cost. What you see here in front of the Shell Beach station is a captain and a firefighter. That's our wintertime staffing. During the summer, you'll see a captain and two firefighters. The city does not pay the base cost salary of the captain. They only pay for the single firefighter during the winter and a single firefighter during the summer. CDF picks up all the other base salaries. So during the summer, you would have two captains and three firefighters that CDF 100% funds at no cost to the city. So that's why we call this a cost-sharing agreement, where the city picks up only 40% of the staffing costs of this station. The third station, as I mentioned, is Avila. The Avila station responds into the city between 150 and 200 times a year on a automatic aid agreement, so there's no cost to the city for the third station that services the city. In addition to the engine companies, you have a chief officer on duty 7 days a week, a division chief, Greg Pisano, who does a lot of your disaster planning, and a fire chief, Matt Jenkins, who does a lot of your policy decisions and attends many meetings on the city behalf. There's no cost to the city for your chief officer coverage. That's not directly funded by the city. So that sort of covers your full-time staffing. In addition to that, we have paid call firefighters. So as I mentioned, we have a single reserve firefighter that's on duty 7 days a week at our main station. We currently have 15 people on our roster. George, can I get you to pass this? And out of those 15, three have been hired by neighboring fire departments in the last 60 days. Excuse me. One's moving out of the area, and one has recently resigned. So we're down to 10 current firefighters that are immediately available and currently responding. We are have already started the recruitment process, as we do about every year, and we've got 19 applications on file, and we're doing our physical and interview testing on April 1st, which will bring us back up to speed. So one of the areas that I wanted to spend a bit of time on is this graph that's currently up there that I've just passed out to you. It shows our number of employees. These are reserve firefighters over the last 5 years. 2001, CDF came on scene November 2001, so that was primarily a city-funded year. You'll see that there were You've got the numbers on top there. They vary between 16 and 21 over a five-year period. So the number of reserves has been very consistent over the last 5 years. In fact, we currently have essentially the same number of reserves as when we came on board 5 years ago. So with our next hiring, we'll be right back up in that 15 to 20 range. And then as we go throughout the year, as we always do, folks find out that the time commitment is too much and they resign. They move on to a full-time position someplace else, or with any luck, we keep them for 2 or 3 years. And then around the end of the year, we'll do another recruitment and start over again next year. So what this chart in front of you shows is essentially we've had a very stable reserve force over the last 5 years and expect to have the same numbers that we've had over the last 5 years in the future as well. So I guess I'd like to emphasize that CDF stands strongly behind the reserve program. We always have. I've indicated that to the reserves. And Chief Jenkins has stated, and I've stated, that we're firmly behind the reserve program and expect to be into the future. There have been some changes over the last 15 to 20 years in the volunteer firefighter slash paid call firefighter slash reserve program. In years past, we had a community-based program where your volunteer firefighters were longtime members of the community. It was not uncommon to have someone on the volunteer fire company for 15 or 20 years. Over time, a lot of state and federal regulations have come into play, and the yearly training requirements and initial training requirements have gotten very, very restrictive. It's pretty difficult for someone to walk in the door who's holding down a full-time job, member of the community, has a family at home, to come in and put in the hundreds of hours that are required to be a firefighter, because the law doesn't recognize the difference between a volunteer and a full-time firefighter. You have certain requirements that you're required to meet, your medical requirements, your hazardous material requirements, all your specialty rescue requirements, breathing apparatus requirements are all very restrictive and very difficult for someone to do on a volunteer basis anymore. So there's been a significant shift, not just in this community, but countywide, statewide, and nationally, from a community-based volunteer program to more of a career-based, where you have people that are young, they're starting their career, they've been to the academies, and they get on a fire department to build up their experience, their resume, their training, contribute while they can to that department, and then move on to a full-time position. And that's very typical of what we've seen in the city. In the last 4 years since I've been here, we've had outside agencies have hired 8 of our reserves. We're very proud of that. They're very well qualified, and those 8 agencies got some tremendous firefighters. CDF has been able to hire 6 into our ranks as well. We're very happy for that because we've been able to keep them in the county. Many of those folks that we've hired into the CDF ranks have continued working at our Shell Beach Fire Station, so they take that experience that they've learned in Pismo and they keep it right here in the community. And a number of others have resigned because they couldn't keep up the time commitment. So that's very typical of volunteer programs, again, pretty much nationwide, as we've seen quite a bit of change in status from a community-based to a career-based. So that means we have a fairly significant turnover rate. Someone comes in, they do their first year of training. Within the second and third year, we get them to the company officer status and driver operator status, which makes them very attractive to other fire agencies, and many times they'll move on to those fire agencies. So our reserve program is strong in the city of Pismo Beach. They do a tremendous job for us. They're an outstanding cadre of young men and women. We're happy to have them. And I guess I'd like to reassure you, if there's any doubt, that we're firmly behind the program. And as the numbers on the chart show, we're very consistent today and into the future with what we've had in the last 5 years. Okay, that relates to our personnel. Now I'd like to pop into training, both full-time and reserve training.
Did you want to wait till the end of it for questions, or?
Thought we would, so that
I'll be happy to take your questions as we go along or till the end, whatever your preference is.
My question's on personnel, and we're leaving personnel now.
I have questions in each
category. Each category.
Would you like me to stop at the end of each one?
All right, why don't we do that?
Tuned into the amount of time we have on the agenda tonight, okay. And I'm trying to make it brief, so if I'm going too fast, please slow me down.
Okay, because you mentioned you had some too, and I was going to wait till the end, but maybe it's better to kind of stop at each category.
So why don't I do that? Why don't I break at the end of each category and take your questions?
Okay. All right.
Very good. So I've covered personnel
so
far.
So we're at the end of personnel, so Do you have questions?
I would defer to Shelley. Okay. I go first all the time.
Thank you. Thank you, Councilmember Rabinow. I wanted to jump back up to the overview one.
Okay.
So you said the Avila station responds 150 to 200 times per year.
That's correct. Into the city or
into
the Park
City
area. That's correct.
Okay. So, for instance, if we use the example of the surf rescue that happened, let's say that engine is brought into cover.
Okay.
How quickly, if we have one or two of our stations that are deployed, if I'm using the right word, on a call, how quickly then are one of our stations in covered?
We will either cover a station or we'll move an engine from the five cities to the boundary, depending on the level of commitment in the city and where the incident is. I would confidently state within minutes. This took place the other day because I heard the dispatch go out. So they're going to make the initial dispatch, make sure all of the other agencies, you know, fairly complex because we had many agencies. We had Coast Guard, State Parks, Port San Luis, CHP, and ourselves committed to this incident. So that's five separate agencies in addition to an ambulance. So that would be six separate notifications that need to be made. So the initial dispatch would go out. They'd run down through the computer statusing of which jurisdictions needed to be notified and dispatched. Once they were completed with that, the very next screen on their dispatch console is cover engines. And countywide, we run over 10,000 calls a year. So it's automatic. It just happens automatically. The initial dispatch goes out, the cover engines go out, and then they're on to the next incident. So it would happen within a minute. So someone has met the minimum state-mandated training to respond from home. They come in from home to the station. They pick up their safety equipment, and they either staff equipment at the station or they respond to the call immediately. A reserve is a paid call firefighter who has completed their State Fire Marshal Firefighter 1 certification. We then schedule them for 24-hour shifts to be our third firefighter on the engine. The bulk of the folks on our roster right now have completed that training, which is why we're at the end point of last year's recruitment and starting over again now, because we don't really want to be, and I'll mention that in training, but we don't want to be training people at three or four stages in their first year. We kind of need to get them through that first year, get them into reserve status, mm-hmm. and then recruit, train, and start fresh with a new batch of recruits.
Because 10 does seem pretty low. I mean, when we look at the other graph, that's pretty low, which makes us nervous because...
We're actually at 15, and if I were to go back and look at the years previous, there are a number of people out of this 15, 17, 16, 20 that have maybe 20 hours, 30 hours, so... we have 10 that I would consider current, mm-hmm. but the graph would still be consistent with 15. I mean, we have 15 on the roster right now, and that's all I did is I took the rank numbers off the roster on the others as well.
Oh, okay. And then, so after you hold the interviews, how long does it take then for people to be interviewed and pass the necessary testing? Then how long does it take to be hired?
Well, part of the interview process is finding what they've accomplished so far. The folks that have already been through a firefighter academy at Hancock, already been through a volunteer academy of some sort, maybe have already gotten their EMT, CPR, some of those certificates, they're well on their way. With a little bit of basic training, we can basically put them into the paid call function. Those are the folks that we would be most interested in and would do well. Out of 20, perhaps half of the folks that come to us will maybe drop into that category. So pretty quickly. I mean, it's premature for me to say because we need to interview them and run them through the physical and find out exactly what their base level of experience is. But we can actually put them to work pretty quickly depending on their level of experience. And the folks that come to us typically are not coming to us right off the street. We'll get some interest, people right off the street, but people that are looking for careers in fire service, they've already got a lot of the basic training done.
And then is there a maximum number of reserves that you're looking to hire?
Well, it's a fairly time-intensive program. The reserves do a tremendous job for us and bring a lot of energy to the department, but every hour we spend in reserve training is an hour that we can't spend doing all the other duties we need to do in terms of pre-fire planning, commercial inspections, training of our permanent personnel. So I'd like to target somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 20 on a regular basis. We might drop as low as 10. We may go as high as 20 at the start. And then as we lose people through attrition throughout the year, you know, if we can maintain an average of around 15, that would be my target number.
So you want to hire at least 10, but you're looking at the 10 to 15 range. Okay.
And well, 10 to 15 total. If we could hire anywhere from 8 to 10 good qualified folks, I'd be very pleased with that.
Okay. And then my final question is, there were some, when we, at our meeting in December, there were some discussions about the morale of the reserves. And I was wondering how that was going and were there steps being taken? How is that going?
I think everybody's anxious to we had a pretty strong team 2 or 3 years ago. Everybody was moving in the same direction. Everybody was happy and feeling pretty fulfilled to be working in such a beautiful community. I think we had some external forces that inadvertently maybe drove some wedges into the department. I think we're well on our way to bringing everybody back together and moving forward again.
That's all I had. Thank you.
Does that include Ricky Heath and other members that are so dear to the city of Pismo Beach?
Could you be more clear with your question?
Yeah, bringing them back. You say that some wedges you think were driven, and you know, I understand now he's out in the county someplace, and I've said it many a time, but we want our firefighters back. You know, they're the life's blood of our community. They know our streets. They know everything. And some of the best leadership that I have ever seen has come out of this these individuals. And CDF, has certainly chosen to remove them from our community. And I'm still ticked off about that, and I'm not going to get over it easy. And particularly when I hear some of the stories about the dissatisfaction with some of the reserves and those types of things. I believe some of this you have brought on yourself, you being CDF. So, thank you.
That was your question. Okay. Did anyone else have any questions or comments?
I don't.
Okay.
It doesn't take that large of a pool to put one person on that engine 7 days a week. As far as a ongoing recruitment, and I'm comfortable in our ability to maintain that third person, even at our current levels, certainly more when we get more folks on. The issue of ongoing recruitment is that a lot of energy goes into the training of the recruits, particularly at the front end. We're at the back end right now, and we still have a couple people that are finishing up their first year of training. The level of commitment from our full-time folks to provide that training never ends, and it would be very difficult to have a large group of people that were months apart on their training due to the nature of the training we do. If we're doing cliff rescue training or surf rescue training or engine company hose lays, that takes 4 or 5 people to accomplish that. If I can take 4 or 5 people that are at the same level in their training and put them all through it at once versus just doing that for one person or two people every 3 months, then I've got a lot more bang for my buck. You know, we've got a lot of jobs that we need to require that we need to do throughout the day, and to try and maintain that ongoing program would be very difficult. So it's I think it's much more efficient for us to do one, maybe a maximum of 2 recruitments, start everybody at the same level and work them through together.
Yeah, I did drop in at some of the training, so I kind of know what you're saying. Okay. All right. Thank you. So no other questions? Okay.
We've strayed a bit into training. Were there any more questions on personnel?
No, there isn't.
Okay. In your outline is some of the full-time staff minimums. Some of these are fire department minimums. Our firefighters, when they're hired, go to a fire academy at Ione. It's a very intensive academy that covers subjects from wildland firefighting to structural firefighting to vehicle extrication, hazardous material, confined space awareness. It's a multi-week academy. Following that, they go through a 3-year state-recognized, state-certified joint apprenticeship certification. That's another 432 hours. In addition to that, they need to have their emergency medical technician certificate, all their hazmat and CPR certificates. To work in this battalion, they have to have specific Diablo training. And then we do in this county a 40-year company officer skills recertification as well. And I've indicated that to you in a couple of my weekly reports that a number of our company officers were attending that training over the last few weeks. In this battalion, to work here, either overtime or full-time staff, they're also required to have a State Fire Marshal certified cliff and surf rescue class. I was one of the primary instructors for both of those courses for 10 years, and so that's very important to me as well. And then we do monthly cliff, surf, and high-rise rescue refreshers. In your package and on the screen now is a picture of a surf rescue class that we did last month. 2 weeks ago, we did a cliff rescue class, again, locally, spent 6 hours last Saturday out on the cliffs at Memory Park, and that's an ongoing certification process for our full-time staff. We do a lot of training with our reserves, but it's important that our full-time staff get their hands-on training as well. So this is our full-time staff last month at Shell Beach. In addition to our full-time staff training, locally, we have multi-agency training. One of the things that we'd like to do is make better use of a countywide training officer's paid call firefighter academy. They do these, we have three per year. And so one of the things I'd like to look at is rather than doing all of our own training in-house, is that we make better use of countywide paid call firefighter training so that we accomplish two things. It lightens the load so that we can do some more advanced training with the folks that have been on the company for a while, and it also puts all the volunteer and paid call firefighters throughout the county, including all the five cities, into one pool when they first start their career. So they're going through an academy with other firefighters that are at their same level of experience and starting in their career, and they can start their career with folks that are going to be working in the five cities, folks that are going to be working in the North County, throughout the county as paid call firefighters. So that's one multi-agency training opportunity that we're studying right now to see if that would meet our needs. We do structure fire training burns that that are ongoing when the buildings become available to us, and those are all multi-agency, multi-company drills. And we're going to be initiating quarterly drills specific to the five cities area, number one, because it's a good idea, and number two, because council thinks it's a good idea as well. So we'd like to make sure we're meeting your intention there. But I guess I'd like to stress that we respond due to our boundary drops with the other agencies, the other fire agencies in the five cities on a regular basis. We had a vehicle accident a couple days ago on the border of Roy Grande and Pismo Beach. It was a rollover right off of Highway 1 at 4th Street. It was a very complex extrication. Roy Grande firefighters and CDF Pismo Beach firefighters worked side by side for about an hour and a half.
Accident you referred to. Was that actually in Pismo Beach, and AG responded to that, or vice versa?
You know, it was right on the borderline, and I'm not sure that I can tell you what the jurisdiction was. My captains could tell me, but I don't have that in front of me.
Sorry, I asked. When you referred to the training, and
Could I add to that real quick? I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I guess the best answer would be is, and not to be flip, but the beauty of it is that it doesn't matter. It matters in terms of jurisdictional responsibility, but both agencies responded without regard to boundaries.
Yes, but it mattered to me because I saw some of the photos and I was curious.
Very good.
Where it was. So when you were talking about all the different trainings, you know, the six-week academy, the 340-some hours or four and some, and you would refer to they did this, and that's all of your staff goes to these trainings, or so many go to the six-week and so many go to the – how does that work?
No, they've been – by they, I'm referring to our full-time CDF staff who have gone to all of these.
Okay, so your full-time CDF staff have attended all of these or are in the process of it.
That's right.
Okay. So then what happens, like, with someone that is trained on cliff rescues and such, and then CDF transfers them to, say, Kern County, and then someone comes in this place, then we have to go train that person again. Is that an additional cost to train that firefighter that comes from somewhere else that isn't trained on cliff rescues?
If that person was assigned to one of the Pismo stations, the cost would be they would probably be put on a training week schedule for that week, and there would be some overtime costs incurred either by them or behind them.
Okay, so that would there would be additional cost to train them?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And I think that's all for right now. Thank you.
You bet.
Anyone else have any questions?
Yes.
Chief Harkness, so in reference to, say, this particular training, you said that your full-time staff was participating in that surf rescue. Are the reserves able to participate in those as well?
We do weekly reserve training drill as well as Saturday drills once a month. Mm-hmm. Much of it mirrors the exact same training. The problem is that if our full-time staff are putting on the training for our reserves, some time may go by that they don't get to do that hands-on training themselves.
Gotcha.
And so I want to make sure that the full-time staff receive the same benefit of that training that the reserves are getting. So, yes, the two mirror each other. I just want to make sure that at least on once a month, if not twice a month, that my full-time staff are doing the same.
Right. And all of the firefighters in our area, it's mandatory that they have the Cliff Surf training.
That's
that
right.
They're certified.
That's right. It's a requirement to work in this battalion. If they come and they haven't had a chance to take the class yet, they're going to be scheduled into the first class, and we'll generally do an informal training just to get them up to speed.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else have a question? Okay, we'll move on to the next section then.
Another section under personnel is lifeguards. Captain Rick Howard has been assigned the lifeguard program and the junior lifeguard program. Captain Howard is a 14-year employee of the City of Pismo Beach and CDF for the last 4 years. He's previously managed the lifeguard program, was a lifeguard for the City of Pismo Beach, and currently has two of his own sons in the junior lifeguard program. The budgeted period for our lifeguard program is Memorial Day to Labor Day. That would mean that we have adequate dollars to staff our four towers and a lead lifeguard in the lifeguard vehicle from Memorial Day to Labor Day. Unfortunately, we have a lot of nice weekends outside of that time period, and spring break on top of it sometimes can be pretty nice. And we have what I consider a safety risk when we have those high volume days on both sides of that. So working with the captains that have managed the lifeguard program, what we've done is on cool days during the summer when maybe we've got fog laying in midweek and we don't have a lot of beach traffic, we'll downstaff towers 1 and 4, the two outside towers, and continue to have our two inside towers staffed and our lifeguard truck staffed, and then use those dollars to sort of spread out our lifeguard season. So what you'll see is you'll see lifeguards on the beach generally pre-season and post-season by us taking those existing dollars and evening them out a little bit for the bridge weekends on both sides. We've also initiated a program last year where we sent some of our reserve firefighters to lifeguard training, and we've also tried to get some of our existing lifeguards on the reserve program so that we have cross-trained staff. In years past, you were either a lifeguard or you were a firefighter, and there was no crossover in between or very little. And we had five reserve firefighters that were also dual qualified as lifeguards last year that actually worked lifeguard shifts on the beach, which Graham, and at council direction, that's a self-funded program. So what we try and do is each year do a good thorough analysis of what the costs were for the year, make sure that our coding is accurate, and then we divide that out against the number of applicants, and that's what we charge each year so that it's a fully funded program. So that's a quick synopsis on the lifeguard and junior lifeguard program.
Madam Mayor, if I may.
Yes.
And this is very good information, and please don't take this wrong, but we have got three really strong agenda items coming up, too. And to go through this line by line, we're going to be here another 45 minutes at this rate. It is good information. I appreciate the information, but I was just wondering, Madam Mayor, if the other council members felt like I do.
I want to hear it.
I'll try and be brief.
Okay. You try to speed it up a little bit.
Absolutely.
Not as much interest as we thought.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm interested.
Okay.
we have apparatus at our Pismo station, and one of those apparatus is a lifeguard vehicle. It's got significant rust issues, and it's in the replacement schedule this year. It's fully funded to be replaced. You'll see that before you, I believe, at the next council meeting. That'll come forward. A second vehicle that'll be replaced this year and is in the replacement schedule also is the vehicle that's up on the slide now. It's the old reserve squad at Shell Beach Station. It's 24 years old. It was initially supposed to have a 10-year lifespan. It's been deferred multiple years, and we'd like to replace that within a year. It's budgeted to be replaced in the year, and there's adequate money there. So you'll see that on another agenda item. I'll just kind of run through these quickly.
Okay.
One of the questions that we've had in the past, I'm going to back up to the Shell Beach Station, and which is slide number 2 in your packet, is out-of-city responses. Pismo Beach is in a reciprocal automatic aid agreement with the five cities, which means that city equipment can go into to the other five cities' departments, and they will come back. And we talked on that just a little bit earlier. So that's the primary automatic aid agreement that the city's involved in. The second agreement is a statewide master mutual aid agreement that the city of Pismo Beach has been in for many, many years, 20, 30 years. And what that is that occasionally a large disaster will strike someplace else in the state. It may be a flood, it may be an earthquake, it may be a fire. When the city of San Luis Obispo was threatened by a wildfire and the Los Politos fire, we had over 80 engines responded into the city of San Luis from L.A. County. Conversely, when Southern California has large fires, occasionally San Luis County is tasked to provide engine companies to Southern California. That's part of the master mutual aid agreement. The city always has the ability to deny if we don't have the equipment available. As I mentioned, the city's been in this agreement for many, many years. There's a long history of us providing, as do all of the other cities in the county, equipment run when requested. That's fully reimbursable. CDF has continued to bill for the city equipment when it does go. It goes on average of once per year, and it's fully reimbursable, and all that money comes back to the city general fund. So as you look up at this slide of the Shell Beach Station, you'll see two fire engines. The engine on the right is the municipal city-owned engine that's assigned to that station. That engine is the city engine, and that stays in the city. To the left of that, you'll see that there's a CDF logo on the other engine. That's a state-owned engine, a CDF wildland fire engine that's also assigned to that station. We shift our staffing back and forth during the year. So during the winter, we staff the city engine. During the summer, we staff the state engine. Either one of those engines and staffing are available to the city year-round when they're in place. When an engine leaves the city of Pismo Beach on a CDF mission, it's the CDF engine that leaves. And I think there's been some misunderstanding on that. We don't, on any sort of routine basis, take city equipment out of the city limits in the state's mission. We do not do that. If an engine leaves the city, it's that state fire engine that leaves. And generally, we'll back up behind it with another engine company. Now, I know that there's been some concern about the contract called for us to generally have an engine company staffed at that station during the summer about 70% of the time. We've gone back and done an analysis. We feel we've had that station covered in the high 90th percentile, 95-96% of the time. If it's council's desire, and I won't ask you for policy direction tonight, but if it's council's desire, I'd be happy to bring back a mid-year budget item, which just basically would authorize a bit of callback dollars, and we could staff that station 100% of the time if that's the city's intention. The only reason we haven't done that is because that was not in our original contract and statement of work, and we were not requested to do that. If we are requested to do that, we'd be happy to do that, and I think we can do it for a fairly nominal increase. Again, I'm not asking for your policy direction tonight. $45,000. So that's $45,000 that went back to the city general, went back to the depreciation fund for fire equipment that was returned to the city when we had no bids previously. Engineer Joe Matichuk and myself went and trained the firefighters there. We did that on our own time. There was no overtime charge to the city. We donated our overtime to the city when we went. All of the training costs, all of the travel costs were paid for as a portion of the grant program. So the city received $45,000 free and clear and paid no overtime for myself or Joe Matichuk to travel there. The next slide is breathing apparatus. When we came on board 4 years ago, we had, at the time, a 13-year-old, now 17-year-old breathing apparatus. We felt that replacement of this breathing apparatus is it's a central firefighting safety tool. If you don't have a breathing apparatus that works you can't be in any sort of a hazardous materials environment due to the age of the equipment and the fact that it was of a different manufacturer and different style use. There were a lot of training and safety issues that we were concerned with. We took a combination of new purchase, which was council authorized, replacement dollars that were already in the budget, and grant dollars that we were able to find to purchase new breathing apparatus. So we purchased all new breathing apparatus 5 years ago. For the last 4 years, we've been very aggressive in trying to find a purchaser for the 17 packs that are 17 years old, and there's no willing buyers due to their age or NFPA standards. We've contacted every fire department in San Luis County and Santa Barbara County, and no one's interested in purchasing these. So I've heard some concerns about breathing apparatus. We have all new breathing apparatus within the last 4 years on all of our equipment, and we have 17 surplus breathing apparatus that I do not foresee due to the age of it and the legal liability of it not meeting any of the current Cal OSHA standards. I don't see any opportunity for us to sell these. We've tried and tried and tried. So, again, I'm not asking for policy direction tonight, but what I'd like to bring back is on a future agenda item, donating these to the Bomberos program in Mexico, where they can find some continued use, and they don't have the same Cal OSHA standards that we are required to meet. They've got many engines down there that don't have any breathing apparatus on them, and through my contacts with Avila Beach when they had excess apparatus, I was able to donate some equipment to the Bomberos program. So, again, I'm not asking for policy direction, but I'd like to bring those to you on a future agenda item. I have one last item. I can take questions on equipment or quickly talk about dispatch.
Any questions? Thanks.
You have questions? Okay. Does anyone have questions on those items?
No. I had one, Madam Mayor. Where it says due to replace, one says in 2 years, the other one says this year. So these are budgeted items then?
That's correct.
All right.
In the depreciation schedule and in the budget, both.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Dispatch?
I can talk about dispatch tonight, or I can defer to our next quarterly report. What's your pleasure?
I think we should talk about it tonight.
Okay.
And then eliminate it from the next quarterly report.
Okay. 4 years ago, the city police department, actually I'll say 5 years ago, the city police department did the dispatching for the fire department. At the time, we had a single engine company that was staffed at our Bella Street station and then two volunteer engines. Since that time, we now have a Five Cities Auto Aid agreement. We have a computer-to-computer aided dispatch between Sheriff's Office and CDF Dispatch. We're dispatching a chief officer 24/7. And all this has combined to reduce the police dispatcher workload of tracking and dispatching all of those resources by last year, 1,150 incidents out of our Pismo station and 677 incidents out of our Shell Beach station. So when a call comes in to Pismo PD from Pismo Beach, there is a single button transfer. They pick up the phone. They find out what the nature of the emergency is. They hit a single button, and that call is transferred to CDF dispatcher. All of the 911 information goes with that. So where the person's calling from, what their address is, the caller themselves, all of that transfers. So the multiple engine dispatching, the ambulance dispatching, the other automatic aid dispatching, and then the tracking of those resources for safety concerns throughout the nature of the incident, that's all handled now by CDF Dispatch and not by Pismo PD. So there's been a significant reduction in the workload that Pismo's seeing and a corresponding increase in the workload that our CDF County Fire Dispatch is seeing. There are some improvements in the future. Right now, what happens when a call comes in to either CDF County Fire Dispatch or the Sheriff's Office Dispatch, it's entered into a computer screen, which you see right here on your last slide. All that information comes up, and as our dispatchers type...
I was concerned that you press a button, and then there's that delay that information has to go. But as it's entered, then everyone's seeing it. All the different organizations are seeing it on their computer screen presently.
The two that are linked presently are CDF County Fire Dispatch and Sheriff's Office.
Okay.
So,
and then you're saying when Pismo Beach takes it over, then it'll be linked to Pismo Beach. When Pismo Beach takes what over?
We've written a grant requesting the computer hardware to link CDF County Fire Dispatch and Pismo PD Dispatch the way we're linked right now with the sheriff's office. Mm-hmm. So any information that we were typing in, sheriff's office was typing in, or Pismo PD was typing in, would show on a screen simultaneously.
Okay, so that grant, did it include consolidation? Was that, did it have anything to do with consolidation with dispatch?
No, it did not. But
just Pismo Beach?
That's correct.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Is there any other questions, comments? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure serving as your battalion chief for the last 4.5 years. Thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, the next item on our agenda is 6B, Mr. City Manager. Do you want to take a 5-minute break?
Questions from the public.
Oh, wait a minute. 6A, I did not go to the public. Is there any questions or comments from the public? Sorry, before you leave, I did not include the public. Is there any questions from the public? I don't have any cards. Thank you for reminding me.
May I?
Yes.
Don Day, 101 Park Place, Pismo Beach. Madam Mayor, members of the council. I would like to caution this council against micromanaging a professional organization that has proven themselves time and time again, year in, year out. I know Ricky Heath, and I think it's inappropriate for us to attempt to micromanage the utilization of employees. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to speak on this item? Please.
My name is Paul Ellis. I live on Hermosa Drive in Pismo Beach. I am a former Pismo Beach Fire Reserve. I happen to know Ricky Heath. I also happen to know Bill Grundler and a few other of the reserves during my year and a half association with the reserve program. These members were removed from this Pismo Beach district, if you will, and sent to other places throughout the county simply because they voiced their support for consolidation. Madam Mayor, you told me personally that if there was any retribution taken out for anybody who spoke their feelings on consolidation, you would not tolerate it. They have been removed. I would like to see them brought back. They are critical. They are surf rescue trained. They are cliff rescue trained. They deserve to be here. They know the area. They are fine individuals, fine firefighters, and I resent the fact that they have been punished simply by showing support for a consolidated fire district for the 5 cities. It's very unfair, and I would request that the council proceed and, like they mentioned a couple of meetings ago, during the signing of the contract again with CDF, there was an attempt brought up by Councilman Rabinault to deal with it in the contract, bringing those people back. There weren't the votes to make that happen. But it was stated by another council member that that would be mentioned and that would be talked about with the CDF chiefs. I think that's very important. We lost a lot of valuable talent there. And I would like to see you proceed and bring those people back into this system because the community lost a tremendous amount of talent. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone else that would like to speak to this item? Seeing none. Okay, I think we can go on to the next item, Mr. City Manager. Oh, actually, we're going to take a 5-minute break. And it is now 6:25. We'll come back at 6:30. Did he quit? He said he's in reserve.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Okay, we're back in session. Mr. City Manager, 6B.
Madam Mayor and Council, item 6B is a Fire Consolidation Oversight Committee proposal of the cities of Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, Oceano Community Services District, and the city of Pismo Beach. Just to refresh your memories and for the purpose of the public knowing, on Monday the 30th of January of this year, the councils and the board of directors of the cities of Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, Pismo Beach, and Oceano Community Services District conducted a joint meeting to discuss potential for consolidation of fire services. At the conclusion, trying to attempt consolidation, first of all, joint training, Shared purchase and utilization of equipment was another item that was discussed. Thirdly, joint maintenance of equipment. Fourth, joint command and administration. And also, we should take a look at joint dispatch to see if that was possible and if the four entities wanted to move towards that or not. So that's the scope of work. In your staff report, I'm not going to read out the proposed timelines, but there are some proposed timelines that this committee would look at trying to take these steps forward and move towards consolidation. Obviously, the timelines are flexible, and the committee, as appointed by you all and the other city's elected officials, can adjust those timelines. Structure of the committee was one of the items you all discussed that night, too. And there was a number of different things that was discussed. What the city managers came up with was to have an appointed representative from each city council be a member of that committee. So there'd be four elected officials on the committee and a city manager from each city and the general manager of Oceano CSD. Further, that the committee would call for additional fire and other technical staff to be part of the committee as particular items are discussed. For example, if we're discussing dispatch, you'd want some technical experts that know the dispatch systems, and we just heard a little bit about the complexities of dispatch. So we'd want to call those other people. We'd want to call in the fire chiefs as we discuss particular items, joint training, et cetera. So what I'd ask you all to do tonight to do is to consider appointing a council member to the oversight committee. And if you have any additional guidance or discussion for me on this proposal, this is the best work of the four heads of the four city managers and the general manager of the Oceano CSD. If you have any other comments, please give them to me and we'll take it back and try to rework it. I'm available for questions.
Okay. Do you think for the benefit of the public it would be good just to review the timelines at all, or to talk about that at all?
Well, you can, but I'm assuming that once they start having meetings, these
could
timelines
anyway.
Could very well be adjusted, but this is the but.
Okay. Is there any questions or comments from the council?
I'm just assuming these, when we looked at these paragraphs, these highlighted things, the one thing about the follow-up studies, I was just hoping we wouldn't have to pay for any more studies, that we have an awful lot of local resources available and expertise, I think, in all of our areas that I think that we could rely on without having to contract with any more. So I'm hoping we wouldn't have to do that.
On a related subject, I'd add that I did ask for the other city managers to kick in on the cost of the fire consolidation roundtable that night. We had to pay costs to sure that to rent that building that evening, and the city of Pismo Beach picked up the cost of that facilitator that evening, and so they are going to divide it by four, and they are going to kick in.
Oh, good.
What was that? What was the cost for Dr. to come in?
Dr. Foss charged us $1,500.
So and then the other cities are going to pay a fourth of that?
Yes, and plus then we had to also pay $250 for the rental of the city of that South County Regional Center. So they're going to...
No chance of them paying for the big study, huh?
We could put that in the scope of work for the oversight.
The first thing. My only other comment would be that I hope, I think it's good to try to hold the committee accountable to stay on course, because you have to stick to these timelines. This is far too important to miss a meeting or two and then say, well, we'll get back to it in 3 or 4 or 5 months. I think that the momentum is here, and I'm glad that at least there's some dates listed and that you're saying in January you come back and at least get the next direction. So I really hope that the committee stays focused and gets this done. That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay, if there's no questions.
When we think about this, so I would like to Rudy to consider maybe that appointment there. And the reason being is there's so many, how many did he say consolidations there were going on around the state? I mean, there were many.
Yes, sir, there's a whole bunch.
A whole bunch of them. And I was thinking that Rudy's ties to the League of...
Speak to this item. Seeing none, we'll come back to the council. Well, Councilmember Higginbotham had indicated her interest, and I had planned on making the appointment of her, and for several reasons, because she expressed her interest. I'd always felt that when she'd gone off on other information-type meetings, she'd always shared information when she came back. She's open-minded. She listened to all segments of the community when she went out there on all the items that we've ever studied. She always listened to everyone. I think she would do a really good job in representing our interests, and she really does her homework. So I was going to go ahead and appoint her, but I'm open to discussion. So,
well, it has absolutely nothing to do with Shelley. I mean, it just has to do. Rudy's been on this council now for, I think, about eight years, and we have gone through these different meetings, and finally we're at the point of going some. It's just history and longevity really do mean something when you're coming to this kind of a forum trying to get this much done. So that's my only reason. I didn't know that you'd asked. I didn't know.
Well, I have no objection at all. I never refuse a good assignment. I was instrumental in bringing CDF into the city when we really needed somebody here to help us out. And I, too, did a lot of research. I came back and reported. I think everybody that's on this council loves the idea of reporting back to the council as to mm-hmm. what they've done. Mm-hmm. So it's not like who can do the reporting better or what. I think that the experience is what we need.
Well, I think in this, as far as the reporting, I didn't know that anyone had asked for the position. The city manager can certainly report back to us because he'll be there as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, just
and I really believe what he has to say, so I think he'd be good at reporting.
Well, I'd just like to throw it out there then, is I'd like to make a motion that Rudy Natoli be the appointment from the city council to this consolidation study team.
And I second it.
We have a motion and a second. As the mayor, I'd like to be able to make the appointment with the consensus of the council, but I would like to have the consensus. So, okay, we have a motion and a second to appoint Rudy.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Passes 5-0.
Thank you.
Okay.
See, we
Councilmember Natoli, you are now on that committee, and I relish you being on it, so I expect you to do an excellent job. I know you will.
You will.
Okay, we are moving on to 6.
C.
Madam Mayor and Council, Madam Mayor and Council, item 6C is a letter that I received late last Thursday, actually right before we went to press with this staff agenda packet. It was you call it an immediate action letter from a request from the League of California Cities from the Executive Director, Chris McKenzie. And it's asking that the city managers go, of the 476 cities here in California, that we each go to our councils and ask for authorization for the city council to authorize the mayors to sign this letter to California congressional delegation and California senators. The subject is about new federal telecommunications legislation, and essentially what's happening is in Washington, D.C., there is some very important legislation that's being considered by Congress, and depending upon how it's decided, it could affect revenue streams to the cities negatively. And so the purpose of this letter is to ask our congressional representatives, in this case, I guess, Lois Capps and the two senators, Feinstein and Boxer, to retain our current or equivalent revenue stream and protect the management of the local right-of-way to ensure that our citizens have access to the communication services going into local communities and that local businesses have the communications infrastructure to support robust economic activity. There's millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars here at stake, and so the League is asking for our city's support in signing this letter. And I'm available for any questions you might have.
Any questions or comments?
Well, I just, for the public, that you might elaborate a little bit, because the report says a little more than that, how it will affect us.
That cities, depending again on how Congress decides this bill, that cities could lose some of their right-of-way rights when these cables, new cables, are laid by different providers.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there a question?
Yeah, I want to add, too, the League of Cities is not advocating any particular, whether it's satellite or Verizon or cable, but we do get funds from the cable people. Satellite does not pay cable franchise fees.
That's correct.
So there's going to be a big battle ensuing, mm-hmm. and the League is not going to take any position as to which they prefer. They're just trying to get this thing organized so that the people are made aware of what's going on. So,
yeah, that ultimately, again, the revenue streams that we now have, that all of us cities have, that we don't lose those revenue streams from these franchise fees that the cable companies pay.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the public that would like to speak to this item? Seeing none, we'll come back to the council, and I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make the motion.
Authorize
the mayor to sign a letter to the California Congressional Delegation and the California Senators.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Just passes 5-0.
Thank you very much. Just in relationship to this, you know, we get a lot of these things from the League, and they come in between council meetings. I try sometimes when I get the emails to go ahead and just do things on my own. And I would imagine the rest of the council is doing that, too,
yes.
because we can't do it as a group always. So I would just encourage us, too, when we get that information from the League.
Right.
Thank you.
And they almost always will give a sample letter.
Right, so it makes it easy.
They make it very easy for us.
Exactly. Okay, the next item is 6D.
Madam Mayor and Council, item 6D is consideration of a memorandum of understanding or an MOU between the City of Pismo Beach and a nonprofit, which is called San Luis Obispo County Green Build. There's a short staff report in here with a number of different attachments. Green Build is a nonprofit that tries to promote sustainable building techniques that minimize construction waste, build healthier indoor environments, and reduce energy consumption, and conserve our natural resources. They consist of a group of architects, engineers, contractors, and developers, and other building professionals, with the knowledge and expertise to further this cause of building structures, homes, commercial buildings in a more green and sustainable fashion. The MOU itself is an attachment here to your staff report. It has a number of duties and responsibilities, some of which fall on the City of Pismo Beach, some of which fall on Green Build. Green Build's agreeing to provide the following to the City: to carry out actions as described in the above mission statement to the best of its ability in conjunction with the Green Building Program. It also is agreeing to provide or to promote green building through community events and printed material. It's also agreeing to support the Green Building Program through educational and training events. It also agrees to develop, according to the MOU, to develop, distribute, and support a resource library, website, and green building newsletter. It will also maintain relations with the public agency, i.e., us and another council called the Build It Green Council, which my understanding is that it's a national council. It will coordinate the production of printed materials, which would be dispersed to the public. Printed materials would include a green building checklist, a green scorecard or checklist, I guess that builders, architects could use as they're designing buildings and building them. They'll provide some printed materials, a legal agreement between the builder and a government agency, a certification plaque, and they'll also agreeing to provide an informational kiosk. The city of Pismo Beach, according to this MOU, will agree to provide $2,000 toward printed materials and other program costs as described above, which I just briefly described. The city will also provide incentives for voluntary green building of privately owned buildings. The city will also encourage non-residential projects greater than 45,000 square feet to achieve at least a LEED, that's L-E-E-D, it's the acronym, silver certification from the U.S. Green Building Council. And this is basically, it's an energy efficiency rating certificate. There's different levels that you they would encourage buildings to be built towards to conserve resources. City of Pismo Beach would also agree that for all future building and renovation of city and private structures over 5,000 on it tonight. I stand ready to answer any questions you might have.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions or comments from the council?
Well, Madam Mayor, I've been working with Slow Green Build now for about 6 or 8 months and actually started this effort, as many will remember, a year ago last November when I tried to get a major development, Los Robles del Mar, to agree to, in fact, use water recirculation systems and these types of things. That never went anywhere, and it was probably just too much too fast. This organization here is part of a national organization, and Governor Schwarzenegger has now 40 different governmental agencies that are working together to try to bring this forward in all building aspects. The reason that I'm so excited about it is that this kiosk they're talking about is actually something that'll go into the planning department upstairs. And when people come in, the person at the counter said, "And have you considered any of this? You know, would you like to learn a little bit more about it?" And it's nothing that we're going to force on anybody. It's just an information-based packet that says, look, we have to protect our natural resources. We have to protect our energy. We have to do those things. This mere $2,000 that they're talking about here is simply just an effort to get some cash flow together to get some of these brochures printed. I will tell you that the city of Arroyo Grande has already signed on to this. This is a countywide effort. They're going before the Slow City Council after this one here. And quite actually, it is a statewide effort that is endorsed by the governor. And it's something that I believe will lead us down the path. So the legacy that we are going to leave our children and grandchildren is going to be very, very highly regarded. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other questions or comments?
This came before Arroyo Grande City Council, and they
unanimously approved it.
Okay. That is correct. Councilmember Revenault is correct. Back in late June, it came before their council. I'm not sure how, but I did confirm with the city manager today. They did. Their council approved the MOU and signed it.
In any other cities, local cities?
We're the second one that's been approached.
Oh, I see. Okay.
They're going through them all.
Okay. All right.
I just have a question.
Councilmember Higginbotham.
Thank you. When is our mid-budget review? Is that June?
August.
Oh.
No, that's in August because the fiscal year closes out June 30.
Okay.
It takes about a month to get all the hard data. And then we'll do it to the middle of August.
I think this is a great program. I just want to be careful not to open up the floodgates of...
Well, this is a one-time.
No, but I mean, I don't want to open up the floodgates of multiple...
Nonprofits
coming in before we do our... So I think we have to be really cautious with that and the timing of this.
Right.
So I want to make that statement.
And you're absolutely right in that, too. But... in defense of that, it is truly something that is being looked at statewide. This mm-hmm. is not United Way or somebody coming in asking right. for their annual. Sure. This is a completely different program that's established and endorsed by the highest levels in the state.
Mm-hmm. I think it's
I can see us doing both. You know, if we decide we want to go ahead with the $2,000 and the proclamation. I think it's that's important too.
Good idea.
Oh, so an MOU
good
and
idea.
A proclamation.
Absolutely. Just solidifies
so this,
it.
But this $2,000 is just a one-time.
One-time.
Right,
okay.
One-time.
Okay, I've just got a couple questions though. When it says provide incentives for voluntary green building of privately owned buildings, does that mean like we have to say you don't have to provide as much parking or something like that?
Oh, no.
No.
The definition
no.
of incentives.
No.
What is
no.
the definition of incentives?
That's a good question.
Yeah, Madam Mayor and Council, I don't know. I'd ask Mr. Bloom if he's got any answers to that. But I did ask Mr. Alter, Nick Alter, who represents Slow Green Build. I talked to him and asked him if he could be here tonight. Unfortunately, he did have another commitment. He said otherwise he'd come. So I don't have an answer to that question. Randy, do you?
Some of the potential incentives could be with the program, for example, PG&E has now started a new rebate program that started in January this year that goes to 2008. Mm-hmm. And there's other type of rebate programs that could, if a building qualifies for that, could qualify for rebates, and that's mm-hmm. what they're talking about.
Solar power?
through the different energy components. But I have a concern relating to entering into an MOU in relationship to a proclamation, because I don't, as a building department, and it comes in and says, what's straw bale construction? We have to have the knowledge to tell them where to go. And I think that it needs to be in balance with all these other type of construction.
Yeah.
That's my
this is a jump start,
my opinion.
Well, I'd like to address that, if I may, because I know the answer. You see, that's where LEED comes in, and I don't remember what that acronym exactly stands for. But LEED encompasses all of these areas, the straw bale construction, the tilt-up cement buildings, all of these different components of Green Build. And this is a national organization and a national certification program. So these people, these other areas that Randy is talking about here, other types of construction, will fall under that and then will be able to be rated in a LEED building. As an example, if the city builds a 5,000-square-foot building, if we incorporate tilt-up construction, if we put straw bales as insulation in the walls or whatever it is, you get points for all of these different things. And the more points that you garner, the more, the higher the LEED certification. I think there's bronze, there's silver, and then there's gold, I believe, is how that works. Mm-hmm. So it's a national effort. It isn't anything that's going to interfere with any single building department. In fact, the building department can certainly encourage to their greatest want or least want to make sure that the people have at least the information that they can carry to their architect and say, you know, doggone it, I'd like to have this component into my home because in 5 years it'll be paid for and I'm not going to have to continually fork out the money. So that's how the whole thing works. It's very complicated. Governors across the United States are coming together on this thing, and it's just time.
But I guess I still didn't have that answer because mm-hmm. it's saying that we need to provide the incentives.
Well, but some of the incentives that we're talking about there is maybe making them aware that if you put solar paneling in there, that you have a 40% rebate that'll be available back from the state of California. If you do this, there are these incentives that are available out there to you. So it's a little kiosk thing that they put up that has all of this information in it in one place, and it's
I understand it's saying the Green Build will provide mm-hmm. that information for us to distribute,
mm-hmm.
but it's saying that we will provide the incentives, and that's the only thing it's sticking
maybe
out there.
Maybe I can clarify. Bing, bing, bing. Maybe I can clarify one thing in relationship to the building department is that we won't be given any incentives leniency to the Uniform Building Code.
Right.
Every building is going to be built to that, and when we get into the full International Building Code, it will be plan checked and inspected to that.
Right. So
if
that's not what this is saying, then we don't have to.
I won't. There's no incentives given away
mm-hmm.
to to bend or weaken the Uniform Building Code?
None.
Is the city attorney is he researching that?
Okay. Could I? Does the city attorney have any comments on this? Because I'm sorry. Did I skip over you?
No. Okay. No. We were just talking here. If that would have read provide information incentives.
Just slip that word in there.
Very good.
Put that word in there, and I think that would
very good.
Solve the problem.
Excellent. City attorney.
When I looked at the MOU, that provision was what concerned me the most. The other ones are really a matter of policy, but when I'm looking at a document that is basically an enforceable contract, provide incentives for voluntary green building of privately owned buildings, information incentives, that almost strikes me as a little bit more vague than incentives, because what kind of information incentives are we providing that Slow Green Build would otherwise not be providing with its kiosk? I would probably be in a better situation if we struck the that language provide incentives, because we do provide the money under the MOU, encourage to get the LEED silver certification. I will point out that certification comes at a cost, and it's not an insignificant cost, and there is a differentiation in the certification cost between members of this national organization and non-members. I think I'm going to pull up some of the certification costs for less than 50,000 square feet. Design review and construction review for members of this organization is about $1,750, and for non-members it's about $2,250. So there are fees for this type of certification. If we're encouraging buildings to get this this certification, we don't really have a role to play in charging that, but we can certainly provide them the information about what the certification involves and what the benefits would be on that. So those are the types of things that I think we can provide under the MOU, but when we have an affirmative obligation to provide incentives, my mind starts thinking density bonus law, where we've got to provide cuts in development standards, I don't want to go down that path unless we have that really.
And they would have a choice to go either way.
Okay, then providing the, I would feel more comfortable if that was out. Then provide liaison to meet with Slow Green Build quarterly. To
this organization, do we know what kind of a business background they have? For example, do we know if any of the principals of the organization are selling green materials like solar panels or something else? Are they in this for something other than altruistic motives? It's always good to check on things like that. It may not be. I mean, it may be just a false trail. They may be perfectly honorable people. I'm demonstrating my lack of vision to Mr. Rabinault, so he's shaking his head. The other part of it that I would caution you about is a lot of nonprofits come before you in all cities and ask for money from whatever fund at a certain time of the year. It's usually budget time. Historically, in this city, it's been budget time. If you provide these folks with the memorandum of understanding and the $2,000, what message does that send to some of these other very, very honorable and useful organizations? Do they come to us next and ask for a memorandum of understanding, too, so that they can get their money regularly, instead of having you decide each year what best serves the people of the city of Pismo Beach and allocating funds in that fashion? Thank you.
Thank you. Mary Lee Hyman.
Mary Lee Hyman. I'm Director of Natural Resources for the League of Women Voters of San Luis Obispo County. And this evening, Madam Mayor and members of the Council, I will be speaking to you for the President of the League of Women Voters. You probably noticed that the League is listed in your packet as one of the many organizations who support the efforts of Green Build. As you know, the men and women of the League study issues and then adopt positions. We remain nonpartisan and do not support candidates of any party. This support is based on a study of the mission of Green Build and the positions of the League. In fact, I was the one who did the background research a year ago, which formed the basis of the League's support. And as an aside, I'm happy to share that research with anyone who wishes to verify the facts and research. Madam Mayor, there are a number of reasons why the League and Green Build are in sync. The League is a strong supporter of the environment, conservation and protection of energy and natural resources, sustainable growth, safe and affordable housing. And I'd like to read you the national position on natural resources for the League. We promote an environment beneficial to life through the protection and wise management of natural resources in the public interest by recognizing the interrelationships of air quality, energy, land use, waste management, and water resources. When you think green build, don't be thinking of the hay bale houses and the extremists. These are folks advocating for you to build quality, healthy homes that are environmentally and economically superior. They encourage, educate, and provide alternatives of energy efficiency, resource conservation, and environmentally safe products in public and private buildings. They can achieve what we cannot individually do. They can influence major changes in construction practices. The League cannot ask you, they talk to the folks that do all of the construction, architects, engineers, contractors, developers, environmental groups, policymakers, and homeowners, and they educate them to these good principles. The League can't ask you directly to fund this group because this action is yours to evaluate based on your resources and availability of money. But we can say that if you're able to fund it, this is a worthy group. Green Build will use it toward goals you want for this community, and they'll do it for us. They'll help us not poison our environment, our homes, and ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the public that would like to speak to this item?
Don Day, 101 Park Place, Pismo Beach. Madam Mayor, members of the council. As you probably know, I build homes and commercial buildings. I have seen very few mandated, required, requested, suggested changes, so-called energy efficient, et cetera, that haven't added to the cost of our housing or our construction or had unexpected, sometimes, side effects. For instance, our houses do not have the air exchanges. They don't leak as much as they used to. We don't have the air exchanges.
I'll come back to the council. I guess I have two questions. One, would the council be uncomfortable if we just went to a proclamation?
Yes, I would. It's because the consistency throughout the state is what the governor and other governors throughout the United States are looking for.
Does the rest of the council feel that way?
Okay, keep going.
Okay, and then my second question would be, I'm feeling like I'm in favor of giving the $2,000, mm-hmm. but would there be any harm to waiting until August? Just so that we don't treat this any differently?
Well, that's everything going back, you know.
I know, it's
just, then it never comes back, and
it's here before us now. No, but so. We could, I'm saying we could do either the proclamation or whatever now, and then the $2,000 request would just go to the August, could line up with the August request, that's all.
No, you know, you take a look at integrated waste management as right. an example. Look how much money on advertising that they're spending trying to clean the environment up. We can do our little part mm-hmm. and become part of the whole with $2,000 and an MOU.
And that's exactly what it is, our little part.
You know, it's
we were wanting to go to team building for $10,000.
Yeah, you know, it's
$2,000 to help our environment. I think it's saying a lot.
And it's a start. I mean, we're never going to cross that finish line and make our world the place that it needs to be without starting someplace. And this is a national and state effort.
Well, I'm not saying I'm against it either. I'm just saying mm-hmm. that we would do it at the same time that we do all the other nonprofit type things. That's all. So.
I'd like to keep that away from the budget, Perry, because that makes it sound like that's going to be a recurring thing. It's not a recurring
right.
thing. It's a one-time
one
deal.
Time.
They
right.
need to raise the money to get some printed material mm-hmm. out. So I think that if we're going to do it, we've got to do it now.
Madam Mayor and Council, if I could add, if you look on the second page of the MOU, it, under amendments and terms, it talks about when it will become effective, the MOU, and for how long we want to make it effective. So I hear you all sort of moving towards approving this MOU. You should probably suggest, a number of years, however many years you want this thing to go. And one good thing, a safety valve of this MOU, is I would call your attention to the last bullet. It says, this memorandum of understanding may be terminated by either party upon 30 days written notice. Mm-hmm. So if at some point down the line the council is unhappy, just by mm-hmm. council action, we can send them a letter and terminate it within 30 days.
30 days. Okay.
But we gotta remove
we've got that for
5 years
now.
With that one line removed.
This removed.
With the condition.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to make a motion then, if I may, and that's to approve the Memorandum of Understanding with Slow Green Build with striking. Is there a numerical evaluation to
second
that?
Line.
Second bullet.
Second bullet. Mm-hmm. Removal of the second bullet. And I would like to make this a 5-year agreement, knowing that it's revocable at any time. And in addition, I would also like to show the City of Pismo Beach's public support at the next meeting by also adopting the
proclamation.
That's my motion.
Mm-hmm. Is there a second?
I second that.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to approve the Memorandum of Understanding as amended, removing the incentive bullet. And asking that the proclamation be put on the agenda next time.
And a 5-year agreement. Correct.
And the 5-year agreement, right.
That's written.
It's already written
that's
in there.
In it.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes 5-0.
Good. Thank you all very much.
Okay.
Very
item.
Well,
let's see. We would be at item 4H. Well, let's see. No, we're not.
4H.
Oh, this is me.
We would be at
6C. Planning Commission thing.
Right out of item 6E, Madam Mayor.
6E, the Planning Commission.
Oh. Okay.
Which is a request by Council Member Ravenel.
Yes, 6E.
So I would like to.
I was looking for a piece of paper in here. I didn't have one.
Yeah. So, Madam Mayor and Council, I'd like to introduce Council Member Ravenel, who will give this staff report.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As many of you know, I've attended the last couple of Planning Commission meetings, and I was so excited at this last meeting for a couple of different reasons. You know, number one, the Planning Commission began thinking on a level of the future of Pismo Beach, the future of our downtown core. And I was so proud of that conversation. And the phone calls I've been getting from the community and the mobile home parks and just not a city council meeting, a joint meeting that would be at a time alternate to council meetings. And in fact, talk about the downtown specific plan generation and zoning, current zoning, future zoning, and those types of things in that downtown core.
Well, I think we schedule those meetings at least once a year anyway, don't we?
Well, that's one of the things that I'm hoping we're going to do is when we get together and discuss it, we're going to do it quarterly. Because we need to have a much better interaction. We need to understand as a council what is going on in planning. I was absolutely amazed when I went to the Planning Commission meetings. Absolutely amazed. Those people do some great work up there. Great work. So we need to meet with them more often. The right hand needs to know what the left hand is doing. And they're too important. So what I would like to do then is schedule that meeting whenever Randy says that they have come up with, because they're going to make recommendations to us, is what it's all about. They want to put the recommendations together and then bring it to us at council. So.
Well, I think when they're ready to do that, we're open.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. We want to do a little preparatory work first.
Right.
So there's a meaningful workshop
absolutely
on all the issues.
Yeah. And Mr. Bloom, do you happen to know approximately the timeline that you're speaking of?
We're going to start the discussion on the March 28th meeting.
Okay.
And, you know, there's several issues, so I don't have an exact timeline, but we're going to start all those the discussions, and it'll probably go over a couple meetings and then come forward.
Okay. So probably by the end of April, maybe, or
could
something
be,
like
yeah.
that.
Okay.
Could be.
That's fine. Yeah. Whenever they're ready. Mm-hmm. And I thought I heard at that meeting, too, that they were was it going to come back to us about setting up a historical committee or something?
That's some of the stuff that we're working on, that the Planning Commission is going to discuss and kind of format a plan to present it to council.
Great.
Okay. I have a question. So is your intent specifically the two topics, the downtown-specific plan and zoning specific to downtown?
Actually, this is what I'd like to see. I'd like to see an overview of where we're going. We need to talk a little bit more about the Coastal Commission. We still have our overlay zones. We still have our coastal zones that we're having to deal with. But the main thing that I want to take a look at, or at least what my goal is to have a vision for what Pismo Beach is going to be in 10 years, 15 years, and 20 years. And as we get the historical data compiled by those in the community that are willing to take their time to do that at no charge to the community, some review of architecture styles, maybe, you know, do we want to keep this a funky beach town? I think so. That has an element to it that I really like. Rather than glass buildings, as an example, as the focal points of downtown. So it's all of these kinds of things that I think that we need to talk about. So just those two agenda, I think it'll stray.
Well, see, my concern is if we try to do too much, then we don't get anything done.
Well, that's the reason
that's
coming to us,
we
though.
We want to organize it.
Yeah, see, they're
digestible.
Right. Right. But I just want to caution that, mm-hmm. you know, when we're here for 3 or 4 hours, people start to get antsy. And mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. if we have a specific right. and agreed upon, if the council agrees mm-hmm. and the Planning Commission on mm-hmm. a specific agenda, I mm-hmm. think that we'll accomplish a lot
right.
more. That's all. That's
absolutely.
All I'm concerned. I just want it to be productive and that we right. walk out of there with something mm-hmm. and not waste anybody else's
right.
time.
That's why I just didn't want to jumpstart into right. a joint meeting with right. everybody with not right. A regular format of a pre-discussion and,
right.
and boundaries of.
Oh, it's going to be exciting! It's going to be exciting.
I think we're open to that. I think I have one card. Art Anthony.
Yeah.
Madam Mayor and Council, Art Anthony, live on Coral Court. I think it's a very good idea for you to meet with the Planning Commission fairly soon. As a matter of fact, I attended that last meeting, and I listened carefully to what Planning Manager Carolyn Johnson and Randy Bloom had to say and the questions and comments from the Planning Commissioners, who, believe me, all understand that we do have a general plan that's in place that has been approved. And they all know the difference between the two zoning codes that they're operating from. They don't go out throwing meadow muffins around about how badly off we are in our planning downtown. They know what's going on. You could learn a lot from them. In fact, I'd like to suggest that a closed book exam on the general plan be given to you and the planning commissioners, and let's see who wins.
Is there anyone else in the
public? I assure you there will be a lot of interest. Thank you.
Thank you. I know there will be two. Is there anyone else in the public that would like to speak to this item? You know, and hopefully, are you going to look at the Rudat and all that again?
We've already been looking at it. I'll
Good.
Be honest with you internally.
Okay. Thank you.
And Madam
okay.
Mayor, just one other thing too. There's only, I think, 5 or 6 historical properties anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, that isn't
the element or the driving force by any stretch of the imagination
no,
of what we're looking to do. Okay.
I understand.
Well,
there was just it was mentioned and
right.
yeah. Okay. The next item on our agenda is City Manager's Report.
Madam Mayor and Council, I just have one item. I wanted to remind everybody that LAFCO, or the Local Agency Formation Commission, has two hearings coming up concerning Los Robles, Del Mar, and annexation, and that's on the 16th of March at 9 a.m. in the County Government Center. 16 March, 9 a.m., County Government Center. And then there's a second meeting on 20 April at 9 a.m. in the County Government Center. Thank you.
Okay, City Attorney's items.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I have nothing.
Okay, is there any council subcommittee reports?
Tomorrow at 1:30 at the supervisors' chambers, I'll be at the integrated waste management meeting. That's going to be very interesting. So that's all I have.
Okay.
I've got a Zone 3 meeting this Thursday evening. Dennis is on vacation, I guess, for a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Yes, sir, he is. Well, for this week.
For this week, okay. Yeah. Okay. He and I generally go over the technical issues of that. So that's all I have, Madam Mayor.
Okay. I don't have anything, but we did, let's see, Councilmember Natoli pulled 4-H and I, right?
Yes.
Okay. Did you want to talk about those real quick?
Yeah. The reason I pull those off is, you know, I can't leave my house to go get my mail up the street one day without somebody tapping me on the shoulder and say, what's going on with Los Robles del Mar? So I thought that this would be interesting just to give a little explanation so the public could hear what's going on with this.
For item 4-H, I'd like to go ahead and ask Mr. Fleischman, who's been our negotiator for this property tax revenue agreement, to go ahead and give the staff report.
Dave. And then you might just indicate that it's at LAFCO. Yeah.
What's being asked from the council tonight is to adopt a resolution approving of a tax sharing negotiation between the city and the county. What happens in an annexation is the Revenue and Taxation Code requires the affected entities to get together and figure out who's going to allocate the increase in the property tax as well as the existing property tax. Back in, I think, 1996, the county passed a resolution that was signed on to by a number of cities where basically the split is two-thirds, one-third. In other words, the county would get two-thirds of the increase in property tax. The cities would get one-third for residential development. There are some different splits for other types of development. The tax sharing negotiation was directed by LAFCO at the end of January, opened a period, and it went before the County Board of Supervisors to open their negotiation on February 28th. I spoke with Dan Buckshy at the county, and while I didn't get the impression that we were kind of railroaded into this, I got the impression that there wasn't going to be any other negotiation other than what the existing resolution was with the two-third, one-third. So our conversation was fairly short. In any event, the resolution that's before you is to approve of that two-thirds, one-third split. The percentage that you see in there, 12%, is basically one-third of what the county gets out of it. They get about 36% before the ERAFT shift, which is fortunate that they, in their resolution, have calculated the two-thirds, one-third before ERAF, because if we did it after ERAF, we'd be looking at a little over 8% instead of the 12%. So it's to our benefit on that. But the recommendation is to adopt the resolution. If the resolution's adopted, we'll ask that the mayor sign it tonight because it needs to get into the LAFCO packet for tomorrow, and so it'll be on time for the March 16th meeting. This is just the next step in the annexation process. There will be opportunities for the public to chime in at LAFCO about whether or not the annexation should go forward, but this is a necessary step.
Okay.
I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any good questions? Okay. I'll entertain a motion.
Madam Mayor, members of the public.
Is there anyone in the public that would like to speak to this item? Seeing none, I'll come back to the council.
I'll make the motion.
Okay.
To approve.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to approve the resolution.
Yes. Councilmember Natoli?
Yes.
Councilmember Ravenald?
Yes.
Councilmember Higginbotham?
Yes.
Well, Madam Mayor, actually, we are asking the city to take a side in this because as one of the conditions of approval for this project, the Track 2554, we imposed the emergency access requirement. And they obtained an easement, I'll just say, from the adjoining property owner, which is outside the city limits. It's in the county. They had a letter from that property owner's attorney saying that that access was going to be granted. So what PVP Investments is asking us to do is chime in support of enforcing the agreement they believe they have, which is consistent with what we're trying to do, is make sure that there is emergency access to this tract. The drawback, and to answer your question why we would want to take sides on this, is there's a provision under the Subdivision Map Act where we may be asked to condemn the access, since it's in the county. It's not owned by Tract 2554. This is a step that avoids getting to that point where we would either be looking at condemnation or waiving the emergency access provision. So, yes, it looks like we're taking sides, and yes, we would be taking sides in this litigation, but it's to enforce a condition that the city has placed on this development.
But this was placed on the development by PVP.
No, this is a condition that the city imposed on the development. It's, we said you must provide emergency access through the adjoining property.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. These people are going to court again, like PVP versus Godfrey. Okay, PVP has to prove that, or they're going after Godfrey because he did not keep his promise. Okay, so in my eyes, I see the city helping PVP along this path.
Well, if you look at it in a different sense, yes, we would be helping PVP, but we would also be helping the citizens of Pismo Beach who will live in that development have emergency access. Because we placed that condition on the development to ensure that whoever lives there, because they will be citizens of Pismo Beach, it's within the city limits, that they would have this secondary emergency access.
They have to have that.
An evacuation, yeah. Right? Sure.
Yeah. What we've been asking for ourselves, too.
Right. Yeah. Up, which you always have concerns area. About. Yeah.
I just don't feel comfortable that the city's taking sides on something that I think that the court should make the decision, and then they come back to us. You know, we put the conditions, but they should iron it out themselves. The two parties should iron it out. We should not step into it. I don't feel right about this.
Madam Mayor and Council, too, if I could, I was given three pages here by Ms. Florence, who is a planner consultant to PVP, and asked to read this, but of course we don't allow that, but I just wanted to let you all know that she provided this to me, you know, earlier in this council meeting, and she represents PVP.
Well, it's my understanding, too, Mr. City Attorney, no City Manager, that actually King Ventures has purchased or is purchasing. I've got a call into Dave Watson. He returned my call today, but I wasn't able to speak with him. And that this agreement was going forward had the Godfreys maintained ownership. But now it's King Ventures that is looking to dismiss this. Now that's the word that I just received from King Ventures. Dave. Yeah, and trying to now establish contact again with Dave Watson. He's been down in Palm Springs. So, you know, the way that I look at this is they made an agreement with us. The city has put a lot of money and invested time into this. PVP has put a lot of time and money into this. And now that there's another negotiation that's coming forward that is jeopardizing it, it's not our fault. And we have to, in fact, provide for evacuation. And it's an evacuation for the county, too. If a wildfire happens out there, they certainly can come down Highland Drive as well. So it's a two-way thing. It'll be gated. It's not going to be where you're going to be out there going riding motorcycles and everything. It's a good thing, and we need it. And it is a condition of the development. So
I'd like to chime in, too, because I think, as Councilmember Rabinall said, the city has put in a lot of time and energy. The developer certainly has put in a lot of time and energy. And this debate comes up in the Heights. It keeps coming up mm-hmm. with different policy mm-hmm. because there is no other access off the Heights.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And now we have another situation where we have another development coming in, and now we're saying we're not going to condition that. We're not going to allow another secondary access. I think that's wrong. And I think that if somebody goes into an agreement, we have a letter stipulating that, they can't back out. I mean, I just don't think that's correct. I don't think it's good business, and I don't think it's right. And I am fully in support of writing that letter to the court.
And I think it was a condition. It's a condition we need. It is an evacuation situation. Yeah. So,
to start litigation or otherwise waive that condition of approval under the Subdivision Map Act.
That's another decision.
Yeah, that's another decision for the council later on. Right. If this letter helps avoid getting to that, then it's worth sending it. And it may have some small impact to show that the city is in favor of enforcing the condition of approval it placed on the project.
Okay, thank you. If there's no other comments, I'll go out to the public. Is there anyone in the public that would like to speak to this item? Seeing none, I'll come back, and I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make the motion to pass item 4I.
Is there a second? Okay, we have a motion and a second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Can we
Any
do it
opposed?
That way?
Yeah.
We can do it that way. Okay.
Any opposed?
No.
Passes 5-0. Thank
okay.
you.
Thank you very much. With that, we're adjourned.
Safe
Yes, it was.